You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Good to be back with all of you. We are in the second week of Advent. We've lit that second candle, the second candle representing peace and the peace that Christ brings to our lives. So as you're pondering life, Advent, Christ's coming, maybe the little bits of persecution we're seeing in the culture with things like candy canes because they represent Jesus no longer being allowed in polite society, or songs like Baby It's Cold Outside. A little later in the show, I'm going to tell you why it's ridiculous that Baby It's Cold Outside is being banned on the radio. So we'll come to that a little later. But in studio with me is Father Tim Grumbach. Good to be with you.
Yeah, what a joy to be back. You know, we've lit that second candle. That first candle was the candle of hope, I believe, and something we really need in our culture today. And now we're in that week of peace, and we got the rose color coming next week, so pretty excited about that.
Okay, and this is one we should all know. The rose color stands for, as a girl, I totally get it, joy.
Right, to rejoice.
Yes.
Yeah, so that'll be a major part in the second reading coming up this week, where St. Paul is just over and over again through all the struggles that he goes through. Rejoice, rejoice, rejoice.
Mm-hmm. So. Rejoice in the Lord always. I love that. One of the parishes I'll go to for daily Mass, the priest always sings at the end of Mass, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice, and he leaves singing it over and over again. And it's such a good reminder, because we don't often remember, we've got to be hopeful. We have to be at peace, and we have to be the joy of the world, of Christ's life within us. I mean, we receive him, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, yet we forget that we are that joy coming into the world that other people don't get to receive each week.
Yeah, and all of those things are so sacramental. They're not just feelings that we have, but it's, you look at, Pope Benedict wrote about hope, Spes Salvi, and how, we're saved in hope. Mm-hmm. And that hope isn't just like some feeling that we have. It's something that's put into us by God. It's sacramental. It's heaven breaking into earth. When we can look at the sufferings of the world around us and still know that we were made for more than the suffering of this mm-hmm. world. That hope is a real and solid thing that happens within us.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. He joins us regularly here on Trending. So you can always find the episodes where he's joining us talking about the culture's tough and joyful issues going on and how we can live through even the challenges joyfully. If you head over to radiotrending.com and click on guests, Father Tim is there with many episodes of Trending behind his name now. And Father Tim, for those who don't know your studies and your background, because you've studied theology very in deep with your priesthood, mm-hmm. and you've worked even your thesis on the different characters and stories of the real people of the New and Old Testament coming to life.
Yeah, that's right. One of my deep loves during seminary was, I wanted to study eschatology, but my spiritual director says, are you sure you don't want to study scripture, like a more focused emphasis on scripture? And I realized that that's what I fell in love with during my time in the seminary. And so my focus is New Testament, especially Mark's gospel. And so I love Mark. I love his community. I love who he's writing to, even though we know a certain amount and there's a lot that we don't know. But just to realize that he was writing to a community, but he's also writing to us, and that we have a lot to learn about who he was writing to and to learn from them.
That's actually how we got connected too, because I was doing a Lenten series on the real people of the New Testament, of the Gospels. And I remember I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and I was talking about different people on the show, and he said, Father Tim, you should check out his tweets. He's been talking about the same stuff, like St. Peter's real, Mary Magdalene is real. And he's like, and he's making sure we have this real human connection with these historical figures who happen to be saints, yet we just put them on that saints pedestal, thinking they're not real sometimes.
Yeah, the saints are so real, and we forget that they're more alive than we are right now. And so they're not just people from the past who, they're not just good examples. Sometimes we'll think of them like they're cheerleaders. Nothing against cheerleaders. They work hard, but they don't get on the field and make the play happen. Right. The saints are reaching into our lives, and they're cheering us along, yes, but they're also reaching into our lives. We've got a big week for Our Lady. We mm-hmm. just did the Immaculate Conception on Saturday, and then tomorrow will be Our Lady of Guadalupe. And so for my community, that's a huge celebration.
And as this is airing live, especially in the Midwest, it is a feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Happy feast day. Yeah. Happy feast day. So later coming on in the show, we're going to talk about why is France burning and why are 58 prisoners in Iowa suing? What are they suing over? Why is that important to some other big things happening in the culture between Tumblr and Starbucks? You name it. But in the news this past week, a story that I could not help but say we've got to spend some time covering it. President George H.W. Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, he has died. And as the country has observed that day of silence, the post offices, everything were closed. There's a reason. He served our country, and I have to start by saying he served it for the unborn in a very, very profound way. And I know there's a lot we could get into over some of his different policies, but he unwaveringly stood for the defense of human life. In fact, as president, he vetoed over 10 bills that would have expanded or loosened restrictions preventing more abortions from taking place in this country.
Yeah, there's so much he did for the pro-life movement as a president. I remember I was very young when he was president, but he's the first president that I remember. Mm. And I'll be honest, I pretty much remember him because as a little boy in elementary school, it was right when he and Clinton were in the race against each other. And as a little boy, I was like, oh, you know, Bill Clinton, that guy plays a saxophone and he looks so cool. I want that guy to be president. I'm, you know, just a little boy. But then, you know, growing up and coming to my own and seeing kind of the direction that our country has gone and recognizing what President Bush had done for our country, especially the pro-life movement, you know, a little bit more maturity looking at it now.
Makes you grateful for those good old war heroes, of whom he is the last United States president to die who served in World War II. He's a veteran. And you know, you guys, there was something really cool that happened this week. His pro-life legacy is phenomenal. I mean, his defense against FOCA, which was going to be a major expansion of abortion across the country. Thank God he really stood and fought against that. And he really emphasized the importance of defending and protecting human life and how we should be compelled to make this a major interest that we ourselves have to advance in each state. Now, he firmly opposed Roe versus Wade, but what I really want to talk about, a cultural issue, an issue where we can learn from him. And that is a moment that I was just amazed by, and I'm going to post some pictures of it. But Bob Dole ran against George H.W. Bush when he was running for president in 1988. And Bob Dole lost, of course, never became president, but Bob Dole is alive today, 95 years old. And for those who didn't see it, Father Tim, oh my gosh, it brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, an incredible image.
Oh gosh, describe what you saw.
A man who no longer stands on his own, reached deeply down into himself to stand up in honor of somebody who, you know, that he was, you know, maybe not have always seen eye to eye with, but still respected in a tremendous way.
Yeah.
And he stood up and he saluted with the only arm that he could raise and showed this great sign of respect.
And he himself, too, is also a World War II veteran, but truly a war hero. I mean, this man, just what he went through during his time really fighting for our country in World War II, there's so much that could be said of that. But I mean, his right arm has been seriously wounded when he came back. And then his left arm, in his left hand, he has multiple fingers that were actually numb and have been for many, many years. But Bob Dole and President George H.W. Bush had a rivalry that went on for many years, but a profound friendship. And it's really neat if you start looking at pictures, and I'll send some of these pictures out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so keep an eye after the show for these. But he insisted that his aides help him get up onto his own two feet, and even if just for a moment, let go of him, because he wanted to pay his respect not only to his friend but his rival for so many years that he had such a profound respect for. And it's a reminder for us, we can have rivalries, we can have disagreements, but we can also have friendships in the midst of this.
Yeah, and just that motion, that gesture of salute, you know, I don't know if a lot of other families can recognize this, but you know, I'm in a military family. All three of my siblings are Army, and to see the respect that they give to those that they serve with, and you know, the sacrifices they make as individuals, but also the sacrifices that their families make, you know, and you know, the culture right now and the climate of how do we view the American flag right now? There's so much that could be said about that, but just to see this moment of respect and the gesture of salute, somebody's able to offer that, you know, to give so much of themselves that they don't have very much left of themselves, but to give so much of themselves just in a simple gesture of salute, and to see that there's some love and some friendship in that.
Yeah, and And I look at these men who chose not only to serve physically with their bodies in the war, but then who also chose to come back and say, I care enough about my country that I know I'm also going to fight politically for what is right, mm-hmm. what is just. And it's a really neat moment as everything's so polarized. I mean, worldwide right now, and we're going to talk later about why is France burning? What's the real crisis in France? But, you know, the call to friendship that even in the midst of disagreeing, even in the midst of, I mean, maybe even being your mortal enemy, these two, there are so many photos of them laughing and smiling. And when they weren't running against each other, they were cheering each other on. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day when he was talking about how Bob Dole and President George W. Bush also came in and they were on the air together promoting what was going on. And one of them was running for another seat in office. It was just so fascinating to hear this friendship that's blossomed to the point of I have to stand on my own two feet with crippled arms, crippled legs and honor my dear friend.
Like you said, it's so polarized today that, you know, and the whole concept of friendship has been limited and cheapened just through the use of social media, which can be a good thing. But to see that friendship is, you know, I disagree with that person. There's no way that there could be a friendship possible between us. But not recognizing that friendship isn't, we get along with everything. We spend all our time together. But it's, I know how to say sorry when I've hurt that person. I know how to receive forgiveness. And I also know how to show forgiveness. And so to see friendship at that level is something that our nation needs to see.
Absolutely. And Father Tim, you know, something else that stood out to me is a lot of people were talking about how at the funeral, many people were there from even when the president was young and in high school. And it talked about how he was actually well known for writing letters to his friends and loved ones. And I thought this was such a great testament that in order to have friendship, it takes hard work. It takes grit. It takes effort. Writing letters are difficult. It's easier to send a text, but we need to be more intentional. And this is a great opportunity for inspiration.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Father Tim Grumbach is with me in studio. He is the associate pastor of St. Augustine Parish in Los Angeles, and he is so generous, always volunteering his time in so many projects, one of which being Trending to be a regular guest host with us.
Yeah, it's an honor. And, you know, generosity, there's no way to be more generous than God. So I'm trying.
Those are very good standards. Now, I'm going to ask you guys this Christmas season to be very generous, as maybe you have a few extra minutes, and share episodes of Trending with your friends and family members. Maybe there are specific topics where you think, man, I think it would be really helpful for this person to hear a Catholic take on this kind of polarizing issue in our culture or difficult topic to explain. Maybe you're having a hard time explaining it to someone and invite them in to listen. So we're on Google Play, Spotify. We, you know, do all of our live posts on social media, YouTube, Facebook. If you know someone who likes to use YouTube, you can see what these crazy hosts of yours look like. And of course, we are on iTunes. You can go and subscribe to everything at radiotrending.com. Coming up, we're going to be talking about why is France burning? And you guys, why Baby It's Cold Outside should not be banned. And why other things are being banned, like candy canes, Rudolph. Oh, gosh. Just wait. We're going to talk about this. But also, why does Christmas last so long today? So, Father Tim, I want to start by talking about some really great news from Starbucks and Tumblr this week. Mm-hmm. So Starbucks and Tumblr have both announced over the last week that they're going to be doing a little bit of content blocking. Starbucks, they, after receiving a petition over the last few weeks, but also 3 years ago, I think back in 2015, they said they were going to find a way to block pornography. Well, now they've officially made do with this promise, because the reality is that children now find Starbucks as a hangout place, and things that their parents are blocking at home are easily accessed at Starbucks, not to mention all of the victims of pornography today that are being taken advantage of truly with our eyeballs, because we are paying into the system that forces them into that slavery.
Yeah, this is such great news, especially as the accessibility to pornography continues to grow. And just to hear the stories of young men and women telling about how they first came across pornography, and to hear them want to go back to that time when they first came across that, and kind of just shake themselves by the shoulders and say, you do not want to go down that road. I do not want you to go down that road. And just the heartbreak that comes from, you know, what's turning into lifetimes of pornography use, and that, it, you know, we're finding places, we're going to be finding places now where they're blocking it. And there's just that little bit more protection against that moment of first exposure, which, you know, some people would say is, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, but I think it's getting lower than that.
It's closer to eight years old now. Right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And if Starbucks is going to be the place where that blocking the access begins, fine, let's start there.
Yeah. And, you know, the more we see different places blocking access to pornography, that's a good thing. That is a good law. Not that we are in favor of overly burdening ourselves with laws and regulations, but this is one of those things that clearly the human person, the conscience of the human person, is very depraved in today. And it's not a sin of isolation, but a sin of, do you know what it takes for that 18-year-old or maybe even that child or 25-year-old to strip down and simulate or actually act out sexual activity, losing their virginity, whether it's a movie, TV show, or pornography? Someone is behind that. And many of the times that individual is having to get drunk and be on some form of a drug in order to get themselves to be quote unquote vulnerable to that point.
Yeah. I'm not libertarian enough to be like, let's just let it fly. Let them run the business they want to run the business, and just live and let live. But I like to see that these individual organizations, something like Starbucks, who, you know, we don't agree with everything that they support,
right?
But that they're finally taking the step forward and recognizing that, you know, we don't want our place to become a place where people either first encountering pornography or someone who just wants to come and have a coffee, do some work, and they look over at the table next to them and like, why do I have to, where is my place where I can be away from this stuff? Because it's so accessible, it's all over the place. And you might have somebody who's really struggling with an addiction to pornography or has never encountered it before, and then just by accident there it is right in front of them, and they, you know, either fall back into the spiral or they begin it, you know, yeah, altogether. And, you know, that we can get rid of that accessibility, I'm okay with that.
This is a good thing that people are taking pornography more seriously. Mm-hmm. Although it may be widespread, it's a serious issue, and most people are seeing that. I mean, it's been for, I think, over a year now, a public health crisis in Utah. And, you know, other countries in the UK, they're banning pornography unless you're over the age of 18. And we could go on. India, we've been talking about all these different countries that are cracking down on porn. And here's why. Because Tumblr has also jumped on the bandwagon of blocking porn. Why? Because child pornography was found on Tumblr, and it finally made Tumblr crack down and say, you know what, we're going to make a rule. No imaging or even simulations of the sexual act, genitals, no even GIFs of the sexual act or illustrations. And that also meant that they were cutting back on LGBT content, right? The content of the homosexual community that is supposed to be an expression of their bodies. But actually Tumblr is saying, no, this isn't appropriate. We need to crack down. And the interesting part about it, and you guys need to ask yourselves, why does that matter? Who's upset about this crackdown on Tumblr? Unfortunately, it's the community that's promoting same-sex acts, and that should say something. We in the church talk about how acts of same-sex interaction are disordered. Well, clearly, this is an example where same-sex interactions are clearly leading to a greater disorder where they're advocating for pornography online.
Yeah, that's right. And we were talking about this a little bit earlier, is, you know, that language of disorder, it, you know, disordered inclination, you know, and the question being asked. I was speaking to some parents at a parish nearby recently, and one of the main questions that came up was, is homosexuality a sin? Like, well, I wish I could give you as black or white answer as you would like.
Yeah.
But I went into the details of what the church means by inclination versus action and everything like that. And it was, you know, we didn't have the time to get quite the answer that parent wanted. And yet we're looking at these issues being pushed and trying to make it more accessible within the community and more acceptable within the community. But we still are missing the language of sinfulness and disorder inclinations, that, you know, they don't even have the language to speak of that, let alone in understanding that, you know, sin even exists. And so how are we going to strive for more morally as a community if we don't even have that language to begin with?
Isn't that an excellent question? And, you know, I was thinking about it last night. I was reading scripture and was talking about how, like, God has a plan for us. It's like there's a plan written into our very bodies. And for some reason, our society has a hard time accepting it, yet we expect there to be a plan in every other part of our society. Mm-hmm. From the plan of how our cell phones have a purpose and they intricately work, that when we have a faulty update on our phone, we're so upset by the disorder because the phone's not working according to how it was made. It has a disorder. There's a function not working correctly. Our cars, the same thing. Why is it that we expect perfection and order from the material things we use, yet not from ourselves?
Maybe we expect an order to come out of what we've created, mm-hmm. but we don't want to look at ourselves as created, because that means there'll be an order written onto our heart and a responsibility to live the way that we've been created. And it's a lot easier to put that order on something external to ourselves, and a lot harder to kind of dive deep and see, you know, what are our motivations? What are we drawn to? What's sinful in our inclinations? The things that, by which we identify ourselves. And if we're identifying ourselves with our inclinations, we're not going to want to place that natural order on our own hearts, but only on the things that we've created.
I think maybe part of the problem is that we don't see that we ourselves are good as we are. You talked about, you know, how you had this person interrupting your talk the other night. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, he is good. She is good. We are all good. We are perfect. Who we are is good. The disorder is not who we are. The disorder is how we act, what we do. And that's a distinction that we have such a difficult time. Like, I in and of myself am good, even if some of my actions are not. It's that the two need to be united together.
Yeah. And you know, whenever I do give a talk on something like this, you know, I was asked last week to give a talk on same-sex attraction and the church's ministry to the LGBT community, even though as a church, we're trying not to use that language. But we also have to be able to explain why we use the language that we use. And so I spent most of my time giving that talk from the very beginning saying, okay, first of all, it's not a matter of us versus them, you know, because there might be people in this church right now who experience same-sex attraction. So I'm not keeping you at an arm's length and talking about it as if it's a problem that's out there. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, what's the difference between tolerance and love? Are we keeping people at an arm's length? Are we drawing them into this community? And, you know, one of the biggest hangups in our society with the language of the church is the difference between love and sex. You know, if you say love, that must mean sex. And so at the end of this talk, a mother did get up and begin to, I use the word yell. And yes, it certainly felt like she was yelling at me and very upset about the church's teaching as opposed to what she says she teaches in her own home. And it was you know, kind of an awkward situation, but it was something that needed to happen for that community to see, to know that, you know, here I am laying down with the best clarity that I can, why the church uses the language that it uses. And yet, to have families that are so far from that ideal, okay, well, we're going to walk with you. It is good that you exist. And that's where that has to begin, is it is good that you exist. And if we continue to allow this scourge of pornography in public areas, we're going to recognize that we're not seeing the good in those people. We're seeing what they can do for us, what kind of use they can do for us. And it becomes this terrible, you know, society of use and lust. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about what's the difference between lust and desire? Mm-hmm. And we're so afraid to admit that our desires are tainted by sin, but that God wants to offer us the grace in order to love the way that he can love. And that, you know, no, we're not perfect. And no, we can't love the way God loves unless he does it through us. And so we've got to, you know, be rid of this scourge of pornography that is, you know, preventing whole generations from being able to love another person as a person.
And preventing us from seeing the good within ourselves. That's right. As well. And I mean, a perfect example of this, a recent law this fall has made it so that pornography is no longer accessible among the prisoners in Iowa. And I'm sitting here thinking, why the heck was pornography accessible to prisoners in Iowa, or any state for that matter? I hope someone is going to work on cracking down on this in our prison systems. But we're going to talk in just a second about why 58 inmates are suing over pornography access in their state, because this is a big deal. And it's flabbergasting to me. We'll be right back. That's Father Tim Grumbach. We're coming back on Trending. Find us on social media.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. I am Timmery Millington. In a second, we're going to be talking about why is France burning and why does it matter? Also, right now, I just mentioned before the break that Iowa prisoners, 58 prisoners in Iowa, inmates, are suing because they'd like $25,000 per person for the apparent unconstitutional element of the fact that pornography is being blocked in the prisons, and they want it back because there's a no porn rule and they no longer are allowed to have, quote, porn reading rooms. I'm sorry, but why the heck? There's an expletive in my head. Don't want to bleep myself out here, but why were there porn reading rooms in the prisons?
Talk about a euphemism, right? Reading. I'm sure that's what they're doing in there.
Gosh. Yeah. Father, I look at this and I just think, clearly there have been many disordered actions among the prisoners to lead them to the point that they are in prison. Clearly there are some disordered actions when people are advocating for there to be pornography available on Tumblr or Starbucks or anywhere else. And thank God Iowa, Tumblr, Starbucks is cracking down. But why would anyone take seriously this issue of it being unconstitutional not to have porn, which is damaging to children and women and men for that matter? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not a single brain out there that's not damaging to, right? And so I don't know enough about the prison system, the way that it's meant to reform the men and women in the system. Yet this does not strike me as part of that reform that right. that we should be seeking for those who have been imprisoned for whatever crimes. That this does not strike me as a way to healing.
Right. And I don't know how the court case is fully working out, but the fact that they're saying it's unconstitutional for them to not have access to porn, well, I think it's unconstitutional for women to have to get drunk in order to act in a video at 18 years old, 19 years old, 20 years old, to act for you so that you can be aroused and stimulated and experience pleasure in prison. I mean, come on, I think that's unconstitutional. What's behind the pressure put on these women to act in the porn industry, many of whom are being sexually trafficked and manipulated in these situations. So great news for Starbucks, Tumblr, and great news for Iowa for cracking down on pornography in the prisons. And, you know, same thing, Amazon was cracked down on as well, just briefly. UK Amazon, someone was Googling or looking up dad's gifts and Amazon, and pornography, an erotic pornographic video came up. And so they reported it. Thank God Amazon took it down right away. But the fact that anyone thought, oh, yeah, dad's gift for Christmas, let's give him some porn.
Yeah, that's a good gift that'll bring healing into the home, right? You know, that will help bring the family closer together.
Right.
You got to be kidding me.
Oh, gosh. You get the irony. We're going to get to it in a little bit of what's going on, what's being banned this Christmas. So here's a question. Some of you may or may not have been following what's going on in France. France is burning. There are protests everywhere. Cars are being flipped over. Trash cans are being lit on fire. In fact, the last death toll that I saw was that 4 people were dead. Over 20,000 people had been arrested, I believe. And we were seeing, I think just this past weekend, over 190 fires were put out in France over protests.
Yeah, I'm looking at the protests and the reasons for the protests. And it looks like that those who protested may have gotten somewhat what they wanted, but at what cost? At what cost is something like this an adequate way to deal with the political issues that they're facing?
I find it interesting. So they had to have over 89,000 additional police officers and dispatched to deal with some major protests that took place over the weekend. I mean, the civil disturbance is unreal. They've not seen anything like this in over 50 years. The reality is we can look at the government, and of late, over 70% of the economy is the government. And normally to keep it at a somewhat healthy level in any given country, you want to have really no more than 20% of the economy belonging to the government. And so that's far more than 3 times what the economy is in France. And so this has been the case for 70 years now. And it's really coming down to taxes and regulations. And while some of the activity and the protests, I think, have certainly gone too far, you know, people are upset when they're recognizing that gas, fuel prices, electricity are being manipulated to prices that are so high, but it has to do with climate change, not with people and looking at reasonable elements for how people need to live in society. It's climate regulation.
That has become such a hot topic, something that's fueled so much fire in the hearts of those who are, you know, taking to the streets now. But it's also become almost not to discount the anger they might feel the helplessness they might feel in when as a government gets bigger and bigger. But now it's becoming a widespread thing is here's somebody that we've elected and now resignation. We've got to call for resignation. Yeah. And it becomes almost the trope of our times is that we have no other choice but to call for resignation right. and to take to the streets and to, you know, and people are getting angrier and angrier. And so, mm-hmm. you know, these protests are, I wouldn't be surprised if they get more and more violent.
Right. It sounds like they've died down over the weekend since President Macron has agreed to alleviate some of the taxes on electricity and gas that were being expected. They were seeing a 16% increase price in their taxes for some of these basic things we need to live day to day. But what's interesting is we're looking at this. So this past week, what happened is the protests actually got even worse. It got to the point where many university students and high school students began to get involved in the protests. And I think that's when France was already burning, but it became more intense. And what I think is really interesting, these young people in France, across the board in France, really, religion is very dead in France. The Christianity is dead. Many friends who are living out there, the churches are empty. The level of freedom of expression of religion, you know, people just don't care. It's a very atheistic type of culture in many ways. I think these young people are jumping on going, here's something for me to stand up right. for. Mm-hmm. Here's something for me to advocate for. This is some sort of way for me to find meaning in my life. And what's really missing is God from their life.
Yeah, I think one of the titles for France was something like the church's eldest daughter. And it's just this really beautiful and intimate relationship with the church in the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at France, you look at much of Europe that, you know, the churches are emptying out and these young people are, you know, aren't going to have the example of the church and the saints and the martyrs and everyone to look up to. And so now take to the streets, you know, not that there's, you know, that what they're feeling, you know, is not valid or whatnot, but, you know, what kind of way are they going to have to vent to the anger that they're facing? Are they going to be called to, you know, the self-sacrifice that the church is meant to call us to these communities in which, you know, which people can care for one another. And then, you know, the love that flows into the church will flow out into the streets. But without that, they go straight to the streets.
Right. Well, and even if we look back just a few years ago, France really rallied against the pressure to bring same-sex marriage to their country. And in fact, France spoke out so vigorously and with such a passion that they were able to prevent same-sex marriage from being legalized. And I think that it was good because when I was really asking, I followed that debate in France very closely, and the French people were able to very clearly point to it's about family, it's about children. And that's part of the reason why so many people were in favor of one man, one woman marriage. But I think, again, it was a problem of faith. They saw, well, this is something that's true. This is something that's real. This is something that hits close to home. So we're going to stand for it, which was a really good thing to see people were getting behind. And even some of this protest against, say, gas and fuel taxes may be good, but it's how do we go about it?
Yeah, and I know we'll be looking at some alternatives to this, or, you know, looking at the more traditional experiences of the church in other parts of the world, and in just a little bit, and knowing that, yes, Europe's faith is really struggling right now and has been for some time, but what are the other parts of the world that we're looking to see where the church is alive and vibrant? You'll see that in Asia, you'll see it in Africa, and yeah. I think I can say in my experience of young adult ministry, youth ministry around here is that, yes, we are somewhat going the direction of Europe here in the United States. But what I see in the individual communities are people who are on fire for the church. And I think I wouldn't be too surprised in the next, you know, few decades that the church begins to take a new shape of sorts in the generation that's coming ahead. That's something that looks a little more traditional, yes, but has, you know, taken on the, you know, this angst that, you know, France is going through right now, but has been able to channel it through the eyes of the church and through the eyes of these intentional communities and love for Christ, and that you know, this next generation is going to help to the church become something again here in the United States that it hasn't been in a long time.
Absolutely. You know, I want to look for just a second the church's document at the end of the 19th century. We saw saw Rerum Novarum come out, and it really looked at the social teaching of the church, and especially looking at what's going on. And, you know, as people are protesting against some of the taxes, even here in California, people have been very upset about the gas tax, which has significantly raised the gas prices in California. Much could be said there. But just looking at what Rerum Novarum says, it talks about the importance and basically the fairness and moderation when imposing public taxes. But before it talks about the fairness and moderation of imposing taxes, it talks about first that morality is needs to come before that. Morality, family, respect of religion, justice, art, trade, all of these things are very important. And when we start to see, especially family, morality, and respect for religion go, that goes, after that comes not overly imposing taxes. And those first three have already gone out the door in France. So of course, the people are now looking for, well, at least it be just in the way taxes are being implemented, because we've already lost family, morality, and respect for religion here.
Yeah, Rerum Novarum was a landmark encyclical, speaking to the way that the church must can support different governmental structures, but not giving the church's responsibility over to the government, the church's responsibilities in the spiritual sense, but recognize that we have a responsibility as church to the parts of society that are really struggling. And, you know, it being such a landmark encyclical, there were, you know, encyclicals written on the anniversary of it, you know, a number of times, the 50th anniversary, the 100th anniversary and whatnot, by different popes speaking that same gospel of, we'll use the word social justice, which, you know, can at times be have a connotation that we don't too much appreciate.
And not anymore. Yeah. Social justice begins in the womb if we lose sight of that.
Right, yeah. But social justice from the church's standpoint of, you know, the dignity of the human person from the very beginning of life. And that is something that can turn the world upside down, and we've forgotten about it.
And I think that, you know, we can summarize looking at France. Why are they burning? They're having a crisis of faith, and they're looking for something to stand for. And we too here in the States need to remember that our lives need to stand for something.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to Trending. Those who are watching live, hop on, whether you're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I would love to hear what you think about Baby It's Cold Outside being banned across the vast majority of radio networks across the country. Father Tim Grumbach is in studio with me. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. First reaction, I don't think Baby It's Cold Outside should be banned. I'll qualify that in a second. What do you think?
Honestly, I don't have an opinion. All I can think of whenever I hear that song is that great scene from Elf, which is awkward enough as it is. And maybe that's just like grasping at the exact, you know, awkwardness of the song to begin with. You know, I don't know if you've seen that.
I don't remember
that
the scene.
Yeah. It's when she's in the shower, just kind of before work that day, and he comes in, and he has no social cues or anything like
and
that.
He's an elf.
And so he's just so innocently in there and singing the song with her. And
he's not watching her. He's just listening with his back to like the curtain or something, if I remember.
Yeah, yeah. And it freaks her out, rightfully so. But, you know, he's just an elf from the North Pole. He doesn't, you know, there's an innocence about him that we don't get to hear that song so innocently anymore, do we?
Right. Yeah. But here's the deal. Okay, Baby It's Cold Outside. We're going to get in a second to the other things that are being banned this Christmas that are a little more Christ-centered. But Baby It's Cold Outside. We have to remember, this is a song that came out, in the 40s, right? Dean Martin. And looking at this song, this was a period of time where flirtation was real in society. People knew how to flirt back then. Now, if a guy flirts with a woman, he's automatically being accused of having sexually assaulted her. And that's just the climate, especially post-Me Too, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that this ban on Baby It's Cold Outside is really the Me Too movement rearing its head, saying, well, hey, look at that song that's sung around Christmas time. A time when people are joyful, really trying quite hard to be generous. Let's go after that instead of say things. My mom posted something over to me, 50 Shades of Grey that we just celebrated, right. You know, multiple versions of this movie. Or let's say half of the television shows that are just as manipulative today.
Yeah, all the music that's on the radio.
Right.
No one's going after that quite yet. We were just talking about it earlier is, you know, how careful, you know, my parish needs to be, because we are very close to a studio. And so we have a big, beautiful church. And so a lot of people will come to us with requests.
So he's talking about in Hollywood, because you're right there.
I'm in Culver City.
Yeah.
And we're right across from Sony Studios. And so we have a lot of requests to do some filming in our church. And we have to go through the script. You know, the Archdiocese says you have to be very careful about what's in the script for what they're trying to film. And there was a school in Hollywood, you know, won't name it. They got a request for a music video done by a rapper. I can't remember who it was. Some people are probably like screaming at me because they know exactly what I'm talking about. But they didn't take a look at the script beforehand. And there was just some of the most inappropriate stuff in this music video. And they're walking down the school's hallways. And so everyone's like, oh, what? Oh, that's a Catholic school. And, you know, there's like, won't even get into the details of what's in this music video. But it was, they got in a lot of trouble for that. And so that's the kind of stuff that people won't even bat an eye at.
Yeah.
And yet here we are looking at, you know, Baby It's Cold Outside, which, you know, has its merits and its faults, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But we're not even looking at the other things in our culture that are perpetuating it even more,
right.
Even more.
So. And Baby It's Cold Outside, gentlemen, ladies too, no means no. But at the same time, who hasn't been at someone's house begging them to stay? Just stay a little bit longer. Come hang out. I think of petulant children who scream sometimes when they leave a good family member's home. You know, there's this desire, like, stay a little longer. We're enjoying our time. And yes, there's more implied clearly here as well. But this is also a time period where flirtation was very regular. Today, it's like we don't flirt the way people used to flirt back then. Go talk to your grandmother. Not to my grandmother. She was spilling the beans. Did I mention this Thanksgiving? Oh my gosh, she was talking about her old love. She had us dying. I'll have to one of these days talk a little bit more about that, but she was scandalous. Oh my gosh. My poor dad, when we were like telling him what was going on in the dish room, he was washing dishes. He was like, shocked. My brother got up and walked away finally.
Couldn't have been as bad as yesterday when that guy came out of confession and started telling everyone in the office what he had just confessed.
You know? Oh, no. With those who are just joining us, he said that everyone in the office had their jaws dropped, big eyes.
Yeah. I apologized to them for some reason. I'm like, as if it was my fault. You know?
Oh, the humility. But here's the deal. Like, flirting used to be so different than it was today. And there was this coyness, but there was also an element of innocence that was present in some of that flirtation. And if you look at that song in the time period, maybe appreciate it for what it is, but also, sure, talk to your kids. No means no. Mm-hmm. I had a mom to say, yeah, like, the song's fine, but make sure your kids know no means no. Don't ever force someone to do something they don't want to.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's kind of an anachronistic judgment of something that happened in the past. Again,
yeah,
it has its merits and it has its faults. And so you can't just gloss over the faults, but you have to, you know, place it within the context of when it was written and and the merits that it had for that time. You know, we have this problem a lot of time when people will misinterpret scripture and they'll see God as this, you know, bloodthirsty tyrant who's, you know, destroying whole peoples in front of his people. And, you know, not only is that, you know, an anachronistic judgment of what happened in that past, it's also a tremendous misunderstanding of the scripture as it was written, as it was meant to be heard and read. And so that word anachronism comes to mind, even in this case.
Absolutely. What else has been banned this year? Father, just looking at this, let's see.
My childhood.
Our whole childhood, everything you celebrated at Christmas, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, these children, our children, in political experiments of political correctness are being done at their schools. Nebraska Elementary School, what they've seen is all of these banned items, Santa, Christmas, trees, cards, music, any sending of a scholastic book that has to do with Christmas, ornament, because you can't only assume someone's gender now. You also cannot assume that they have a Christmas tree, okay? That's offensive. But you also can't have a candy cane because the J represents Jesus and the red, the blood of Christ, and the white, the resurrection of Christ, the divinity of Christ.
Yeah, that may not even be the original reason for all those elements of the candy cane to begin with. Maybe something that's been tied on, you know, throughout history. And the whole, you know, J for Jesus thing, actually, it seems it was more so, if anything, it was a shepherd's staff to resemble, you know, the shepherds at Christ's birth. And
exactly.
So if you're going to be upset because it resembles Jesus, at least be upset for the right reason, you know? we're not so simple as that. Our symbolism isn't so weak, like let's put a J everywhere and it must mean Jesus. No, we have real symbolism, real images that speak to, you know, these are the poorest of the poor people coming to greet the new king, you know? You know, don't give me your millennial hipster nativity sets. That's garbage, you know? No, that's the king infiltrating into his creation, his inheritance that has, you know, denied his inheritance, that doesn't want him, and he's breaking into it. You know, the nativity is something powerful, and it's not just symbolic. It's God actually breaking, you know, heaven breaking into earth. And here we are, it's like, oh, I don't like it because it looks like a J.
We're telling children this? Yeah, are you serious? Like, yeah. Children could be offensive.
At least be upset because it's a king infiltrating his own creation, you know? Gosh.
Go tell your kid no to more sweets and yes to more goodness. But, I mean, there's a reason that the holiday season, and I'm holiday, when I say holiday, just to be really clear, because I cringe when I hear holidays anymore. Do you know what holidays stand for? Come on. I mean, you can't get away from Christianity, really. I mean, any word you use, even, like, come on, holiday.
Yeah.
Holy days. Holy days. So, hallelujah. When we're talking about holidays, be like, thank you so much for talking about the holy days, holy seasons that are happening. But, you know, we're looking at this in... It's hilarious. So hold on. I just have to mention this for a second because the irony of this is just too good. You know what was listed as okay at the Nebraska elementary school that was totally allowed? Snowflakes. Snowflakes. Yeah, I mean, this is what we're calling people now. Snowflakes, yeah, right? Can't handle anything. Yeah. Emotionally triggered at everything. Oh, gosh. But I will, to give her the benefit of the doubt, the principal who enacted this edict upon her school ended up kind of getting in trouble, public apology, and the school district got involved. The school board got involved, and she had to take back her ban on Christmas. And what's hilarious is she did kind of refer to herself as the Grinch because she knew this was horrible.
Yeah, I'm going to take away your Christmas vacation, too.
Take away your Christmas vacation. Yeah, she should. You know what? She should lose her Christmas vacation. No, I'm kidding.
Principals work hard. You know, she was probably under some stress and you know, came to a rash decision. She made her apologies. And I don't want to say anything too negative about principals because they work their tails off.
They do.
They have a lot of expectations on them.
They do. So don't take out your anger on children by banning Christmas. Come on. So the other piece of good news, there was a picture of Santa kneeling at a manger. Oh. Very well-known picture. And it was actually banned on Facebook as, quote, violent or graphic. And so a person had to, like, be really sure they wanted to see it and, like, double click in order to get through the picture. Facebook removed that ban because Santa kneeling is not graphic or violent.
So it wasn't a picture of St. Nicholas, you know, punching the heretic Arius in the face. It was St. Nicholas kneeling down in front of the infant king who has come to infiltrate his inheritance, right? Yeah, yeah.
And all of those wise men with shepherd's staffs candy canes.
They look like Jays.
Oh, gosh. But here's the thing, Father Tim. I think that we see now Christmas anymore really does start the day after Halloween, right? I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
I mean, the day after Halloween, the latest people wait to celebrate Christmas is the day after Thanksgiving. Why is that?
It's because we've forgotten about Advent, if you ask me. We've forgotten about Advent. And so Christmas gets exhausting.
It is exhausting, actually. You know, having to hear, baby, it's cold outside. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All those songs for 3 months instead of maybe a month and a half.
Yeah, well, it's a matter of our society not being able to wait. You know, we have this expectation of immediacy. And so Christmas starts right after Halloween or right after Thanksgiving.
Okay, I will give you that. I totally agree with that. But I also think Christmas brings out some of the best in people. Yes, some of the worst with the materialism, but I also think some of the best. People want good news. People want to have those holiday parties where they see people they haven't seen in a long time. People want to give and they want to receive. There's something so great about Christmas. We've expanded it to the day after Halloween. And I think that's pretty awesome. So although these things are being banned, we still have Christmas. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But don't miss Advent, because it's a building up to Christmas and it's about anticipation. We're awaiting people.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. Where can people find you on social media, Father?
At Father Tim Grumbach on Twitter and Father Dediwop on Instagram.
You can reach me on Twitter at Tim Ray. If you enjoyed the show, send me a note. Head over to radiotrending.com/contact or check out all the episodes on radiotrending.com with Father Tim Grumbach.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.